Woo, that was the best game of the postseason. Yes, welcome on into First Pitch for Friday, October 18th. Your source of news, notes, and updates on Major League Baseball. I'm your host, Lindsey Crosby. Follow me on Twitter at Crosby Baseball. He's Christian Rau. Follow him on Twitter at Christian S. Rau, R-A-U-H. And Christian, we got two games yesterday. We're going to talk about the Dodgers taking down the Mets in another blowout in that series. NLCS has been full of those. We're going to talk about tonight's matchups. But Yankees Guardians, 7-5 Cleveland win in extra innings. And as somebody who has watched almost every game of the postseason, we had youth sports for one or two. And when you were doing four a day, sometimes they'd overlap a bit. Somebody who's watched almost every game, I think I can safely say that was the best game of the postseason so far.
Yeah, definitely. No, I think that was definitely the best game of the postseason. That was one of the best October games I remember in quite some time. So yeah, that was quite a game. I was really excited. I tuned into that one, made sure. When we got towards the end of the game, my Hulu decided to crap out, so I struggled to find a way to get back onto the game. Figured that out, but I missed a good portion at the top of the 10th inning. Thankfully, ooh, I didn't miss much, but other than that, it was an absolutely crazy game. I did not miss anything about seeing Christmas in Cleveland because we saw that. That was outrageous. And then what Fry did at the end was just outrageous, just absolutely incredible. Did you see the edit? I'm sure you have, but did you see that they made an edit for Fry with the Moneyball music? It is perfect. Absolutely perfect.
You got to do something like that. I mean, that's one of my favorite things every time you have a great postseason moment. Is something like that. I love the Moneyball references there. So kind of recap what's going on in this game. Yankees take an early 1-0 lead in the second. Something where Anthony Volpe walks, Alex Verdugo doubles, Jose Trevino, who enters the lineup in place of Austin Wells. Trevino, I believe it's his first game action of the postseason, actually, hits a single, scores a run. Guardians come back and get two in the third on a Brian Rocchio single and then a Kyle Manzardo homer. And, you know, Guardians add another one in the sixth to go up 3-1. Yankees turn around in the eighth inning and take a lead from who else? Aaron Judge. Finally, I'm not going to say showing up in the postseason, but finally doing what he's capable of. He gets a home run to right field, goes the opposite way off of Emmanuel Clase. I don't understand what's going on with elite closers in the postseason. Emmanuel Clase has allowed more runs in October than he did in the entire regular season. After that, Giancarlo Stanton goes back to back. That's how the Yankees get the lead. It's not over, though. Big Christmas, Joensky Noel coming in as a pinch hitter, gets a home run in the ninth inning to tie this whole thing up. We go to extras, and David Fry walks it off with a 2-run home run, pinch hitting for Kyle Manzardo. Before we break down what happened with Cleveland, what happened with New York and everything, I guess I have two things. One, did you see this game having this many extra base hits and home runs? Because it just felt like neither of these teams have really crushed a lot of balls this postseason. And two, I feel like somebody on this show talked about when the Guardians got back home, they used the home field advantage to pick up more extra base hits and hit some home runs. Of the, I believe it was the 11 hits for Cleveland in this game, 7 are extra base hits, 3 home runs, 4 doubles. They still only go 3-for-15 with runners in scoring position, but they had 15 opportunities, which is not something they could say when they hit nothing but singles in the first couple games of the series.
Yeah, and we found out that the back of both bullpens, not just Cleveland, because I know that's really the narrative is going to be, but the back of both bullpens are human, right? Weaver let up some home runs finally. Clay Holmes, we saw, you know, leave some things. We've known that for quite some time now. But
yeah,
he takes the loss. We've seen some issues with the back of the Yankees bullpen. On the other side, though, Emmanuel Clase, as you mentioned, he allowed 2 home runs all season long in the regular season. He allowed 2 home runs in about 60 seconds in this game. It was absolutely wild. One of our buddies in the Discord, shout out to Bacon, by the way, big Yankees fan in our Discord, let us know that Clase has blown 5 of his last 9 games against the Yankees. I did not know that stat, and that is absolutely incredible. But yeah, this was one of those games that you saw both managers use everything they possibly needed to out of the bullpen. You kind of needed to, because, you know, there's so many extra base hits. There were so many just wild plays. You had to go to different measures. With the Yankees, it was actually because there was a couple injuries. Ian Hamilton was dealing with some sort of injury at one point. I think he's getting an MRI today. I think if I remember correctly, it's a calf injury. Mm-hmm. So yeah, there's a lot of things going on with this bullpen, but the main thing in this one to me, I know that we mentioned with the Yankee side, but Clase, if we can't have Emmanuel Clase be a shutdown closer, if we can't have Devin Williams be known as a shutdown closer in the playoffs, Josh Hader, just those three alone, I think that's fair. Just say those three. If we can't assume that they're going to be shutdown closers in the postseason, then there's no such thing as a shutdown closer in my mind anymore. We need to get rid of that word, because we have just found out in this postseason that we no longer have that. The definition has changed.
I don't know what's different about October when it comes to a closer. It's already a hard job. It's already a weird job. And for some reason, it's not necessarily working in the postseason. Now, some of this may be exposure. I believe that the DataCast version of the game talked about this, about the more you see a specific reliever, the specific hitters see a specific reliever. It's not as extreme as the third time through the order penalty for a starter, but it is something similar to that. The more you see, the more that a same hitter sees the same reliever, the better and better they perform against them. Obviously, doesn't really come up in a 3-game series. You don't see them that much, but something like this, where you're potentially playing 7 games, it ends up being huge. And I do think there's something to that. I'm excited to see this offseason because of all the prominent names like you talked about. You know, we saw Hader fail. We saw Devin Williams. We've seen Clase struggle. We've seen Edwin Diaz struggle. I'm really curious to see what kind of research comes out of this in the offseason from a lot of the baseball writers who kind of dig into the numbers on some of the repeat uses of closers against the same hitters from game to game. But this game, I mean, 17 hits, 15 strikeouts, 15 pitchers get used. Both teams really, like you said, kind of go all out. The Yankees use 2 pinch hitters. I believe Cleveland used their entire bench. They had 3 pinch hitters, and then they had Bo Naylor come in as a defensive replacement after they pinch hit for Austin Hedges. So kind of managing all the way through. Let's get into Cleveland first, because they won, so they kind of deserve that. Matthew Boyd, first time this postseason a Cleveland starter has gone 5 innings. So they were tied for the record for most consecutive under 5 inning starts to open a postseason. They do not set the record because he goes 5. 2 hits, 1 run, 3 walks to 4 strikeouts. And something that we don't talk about enough when it comes to park factors, when it comes to you know, how a ballpark plays offensively, we always think about home runs, right? What are the dimensions and the wind, and how does that impact home runs? But the broadcast did a good job of showing, with Matthew Boyd's release point early in the game, he is his left arm and his hand are silhouetted again, like he's in the shade, but he's silhouetted against a batter's eye that is in the sun. And so it was very hard to pick up the pitch out of his hand early in the game. And really, you didn't see a lot of offense, I'd argue, from the Yankees at all until they got him out of the game, right? Again, 2 hits. They did get plenty of base runners. They had 3 walks, but they really can't do a lot against Matthew Boyd simply because of just how good his stuff was. And then 2, how hard it was to see what he was doing and pick the ball up out of the hand because of the sun. There's that home field advantage. That's an area we don't talk about, but it definitely played into yesterday's early part of the game.
Yeah, I mean, it was 3-1 going into the eighth inning. The Guardians were leading, and it wound up, you know, being a 7-5 victory. So I agree with you that not much offensive production happened for the Yankees until Boyd was out of the game. I sent a tweet after the first inning of Boyd's pitching and saying, you know, Matthew Boyd has been outstanding in the postseason. The only problem is he hasn't pitched enough, you know, because we are only seeing him pitch. I think going into it, he had six innings across his two starts. You know, if you finally see him go five innings, maybe they read the tweet. Maybe it was. Maybe Stephen Vogt hopped on the Twitter, and he's probably got my notifications on. That's probably what it is, Lindsay.
That's a joke, people. It's technically against the rules.
I really
for
think
him
that
to have a phone, you know, in the
seeing Boyd.
Just wanted to make sure everybody knows it's against the rules,
true,
to have,
yeah,
a, to have
we
a phone.
We are talking postseason baseball.
Yeah,
trash cans, no phones, right? but
the front office really can have it.
To see Boyd go farther in this one. Four strikeouts, three walks. That was the only issue to me, not giving up the run. The run wasn't a big deal to me, but his walks were the only concerning part of his outing, because he has been pretty nails when it comes to striking out. I think he has 14 strikeouts now across his 11 innings in the postseason. He has been the best pitcher on that Cleveland roster so far in the postseason, bullpen and starting rotation included.
And it wasn't a walk. The guy got on via hit, but it does help that he kind of cleaned up one of his own messes with picking off Jose Trevino. This has been a thing for me real quick. The first and third steal situation. I enjoy watching this in baseball because it's obvious neither offenses nor defenses properly understand how to handle this. The Guardians tried it earlier in the series. Kyle Manzardo was on third, one of the slowest first basemen in the league. He didn't even try to run. You see this last night. Jose Trevino is on first. Alex Verdugo, who is a good base runner, is on third. Trevino is a catcher. Boyd's a left-handed pitcher, so you shouldn't even be trying this, but Trevino goes to make a little break for second base. Boyd turns, throws behind him. They get him in a rundown. Verdugo never scores from third, and it's another example of this Yankees team is not good, like, team speed-wise. They are tied with the Braves for, like, lowest average sprint speed in baseball as a collective offensive roster, but they're also not good at base running. And that was another example. You had two toot lands in game two. You have another one here. And if you can't be quick on the base paths, be smart. And right now the Yankees aren't doing either. It's not the reason they lost this game, but it's kind of an example of they're not getting the little things successfully done so that they can, you know, so that they can somehow get a win across in October. The little stuff on the margins matters in October. And Trevino shouldn't be trying to go if Verdugo's not going to break for home as soon as a throw happens. And it was just, he's a catcher. He's not going to be safe at second base in almost any situation unless they turn and focus on Verdugo. The Yankees just mishandled that first and third situation. So many teams do. Not really anybody knows how the right way to approach that yet, but it was a bad decision in the first place from the Yankees.
You know, we've seen it so many more times than usual this postseason already. I feel like we've seen it like three or four times already, that I'm going to go out on a limb and say that one game in the rest of this postseason, whether it's the World Series or not, is going to come down to one of those successful first and third steal. I'm waiting for it because it's going to happen.
Yeah, it's just, I mean, again, postseason games, when you have teams that are closely matched, a lot of this comes out to the margins. And things like that are where it matters. I'm not saying you should have pinch ran for Jose Trevino there. It was still, I want to say that was, I was pretty early in the game still. I don't think you should have done something like that. But still just a situation where you've got to handle it better. Verdugo has to be ready to break when Trevino goes. Trevino has to wait until Boyd's going to the plate before he takes off or something like that. You got to do something. They handled it wrong. I'm not saying that the decision to call it was bad, but obviously not everybody was on the same page. Trevino he broke too early. It wasn't done well. And like you said, I feel like that's going to come back some point in time in the postseason. Somebody's going to execute one of these successfully to get a lead or to get a winning run, something like that, to get a margin, an insurance run, something like that. if you're the Yankees, are you worried about some of the trends that we saw from this game continuing? You only had 6 hits. You struck out 10 times. Aaron Judge did have that home run. He still only went 1-for-5, 3 strikeouts, batting 174 in the series. It's still, Jazz Chisholm still hasn't gotten going. He was 1-for-4, still only batting 148. You put Birdie in at first base in place of Anthony Rizzo. His lack of height cost you on a base hit right over his head. Rizzo probably gets that. Birdie's only 5'10". He goes, I think Birdie went 0-for-4 in the thing. Rizzo came in later and walked, I want to say in like the 10th inning maybe. Are you worried that you still aren't getting contributions from the rest of the offense and you still haven't gotten Judge going? Or was this just something, the home run from Judge, Chisholm getting a hit and stealing a base, is that kind of a sign that they're starting to come out of the funk?
Yeah, a lot of that funk stuff happened at the beginning of the game, and then they started kind of figuring it out towards the end. So I think that you have to have a little bit of concern, but overall, I think you're going to be fine. I mean, you still have a 2-1 lead in this series. I think even though you lost a pretty heartbreaking loss, a gut-wrenching one, if you will, in last night's game, I think they're going to be fine. The John Birdie situation at first base, I think that's the last time we're going to see that in this postseason. I think we got one day off for Anthony Rizzo, but I think you're going to see Rizzo at first base for the remainder of the series.
Outside of that one defensive play, like over his head, I thought Birdie was pretty good at first.
Oh, he wasn't.
And Rizzo had an error when he came in. Like Rizzo had a fielding error at first base. I think you may see more of Birdie because, other than the lack of height, he's not really a downgrade on Rizzo defensively, which is wild to say. And neither one of them, Rizzo has a limited sample size. He's doing okay at the plate. I feel like you could maybe see more of it. I just don't know if you'll see Birdie starting over Rizzo.
Yeah, I think Rizzo's doing a little better at the plate for sure, that what I've seen than Birdie as of lately. And that's where I've leaned towards. I think they're defensively right now, I don't think it really matters. Yeah, I think Birdie's done just a fine job. There's been a couple issues with his glove yesterday that, as you mentioned, you know, probably changes if Rizzo's in there because of the height difference. But other than that, I don't think it too much changed. But other than that, man, I don't really see much difference. Jose Trevino, we saw him get a run. I know we're on the segue over to the Mets. I hope the Mets listen to that one, because if you change your catcher up inside a game, guess what happens? You get a hit, and the Mets haven't figured that one out yet. But other than that, no, I don't think the Yankees should be worried.
Scientific strategy. This is just kind of putting the bow on the Yankees here. Judge and Stanton home run in the same game is typically a winning recipe for them. This was the 5th time in 50 games that those two both homered and they didn't win. 3 of those 5 were this season. So I guess just a little bit frustrating, but the Yankees are also the first team in postseason history to be trailing by multiple runs in the 8th or later and hit back-to-back home runs to take the lead. Shout out to Sarah Langs, the great Sarah Langs of MLB.com, for that stat. And it's the first time the Yankees went back-to-back in the postseason at all since Game 5 of the 2010 ALCS. So, obviously, they did everything they could. The big Christmas, Joensky Noel and David Fry had other ideas. We'll see what happens in the next matchup between these teams. They play tonight at 8:08 p.m. Luis Gill, who I think is making his first start of the postseason, versus Gavin Williams on TBS. That's the late game. But before we get to that, the first game, Dodgers-Mets, I feel like every game in this series has been a blowout. This is a 10-2 victory by the Los Angeles Dodgers. They're up 5-2 by the 4th inning. They add 2 more in the 6th. They add 3 more in the 8th. Something where Ohtani gets his first hit with the bases empty this postseason, leadoff home run. Mookie Betts hits a home run in the 6th. And they roll without Freddie Freeman, which, correct me if I'm wrong, I think that's the second time they've won this postseason when they sit Freddie to rest that ankle. Mookie Betts, 4-for-6, 3 runs, 4 RBI. Is this the best single game performance of his career in October?
I think so. Yeah, I think without just looking at the stats or without digging into it, it's definitely his best one of this season, because he struggled this postseason. This was finally the wake-up call they needed. And what's crazy is they needed to take Freddie Freeman out of the lineup to do it. Not saying it's his fault, but just kind of changing up the lineup and, you know, kind of just having them wake up to get a little bit of a jolt, something that the Mets should have done, change their lineup a little bit. The Dodgers do it and they get rewarded for it. Shohei Ohtani was incredible. You know, he walked three times. That's enough. Hey, you don't have to hit home runs every time.
Here's the stat. Ohtani and Betts combined 5 of 9, 2 homers, 5 RBI, reached base 8 times. It's the first time that the top 2 in a lineup in the postseason scored 7 or more runs in a game since Jeter and A-Rod in 2009.
It's incredible. And then you add a guy like Max Muncy at the bottom of your lineup who's got on base, what, 12 straight times? So, I mean, you got to love that. You got to love what this Dodgers team is doing right now. Tommy Edman is becoming one of those secret weapons. I have a chat somewhere, and I'm going to find it. It's in one of our Discords from one of our writing Discords that I tagged when I was writing for the Cardinals, saying, watch what will happen. If Dodgers make the World Series, Tommy Edman's going to wind up being the World Series MVP. And it seems like it's priming to be that possibility, that case. He seems to be that secret weapon for this Dodgers squad. He hits another home run in this one. 696 OPS in the postseason so far, but I think he's just warming up. On the other side, Lindsay, with these Mets team.
Before we get to the Mets, hang on. Okay. Real quick. The Max Muncy thing that you talked about, 12 consecutive plate appearances getting on base. Home run, 3 walks, single, 2 walks, home run, 3 walks, single. It is just for a dude that did not thrive in the regular season and has dealt with injuries. To have 12 straight on base, he struck out in the 8th inning.
The amount of walks is more impressive to me than the hits. I think that's really so impressive.
And that's been a theme of this Dodgers team. Like, they're just not chasing in the postseason, with the exception of Ohtani when the bases are empty. They are not really expanding the zone, and they are not really chasing a ton. They finished this game. They struck out 11 times. Okay. Yes. They walked 9. And it's like, this is just kind of nuts. Jose Quintana came into this game with the lowest end zone rate of any qualified starting pitcher, 44%. The Dodgers drew 9 walks in this, and they have 31 walks in this series. That is a record for any 4-game stretch in a postseason. Now the Mets, at the same time, that is the record for the most issued in any 4-game stretch in the postseason. They are tied with the 2017 Cubs, who closed out the NLDS and opened the NLCS that year with a total of 31. But this is just, I mean, that's what they did. Like, they walked more than anybody else in the regular season. They chased less. And obviously, teams have not adjusted to be able to attack them in the zone yet. Sorry, go ahead.
No, yeah, you're absolutely right. And it's crazy that they've had so many walks. And I think that's what's honestly making it fun for me. Yeah, walks, some people think walks are boring. It is a chess move in my mind. And seeing 9 in one game is incredible. Mm-hmm. On the flip side, though, you mentioned, you know, the Mets squad has struggled. What we saw with this pitching rotation when they played the Phillies was insane. It has not come, it has not translated into this series, the NLCS. Jose Quintana thought this was going to be like the Mets' best chance of winning a game. We talked about it yesterday. That did not happen. That did not happen. 3 1/3 innings, he let up 5 runs. He walked 4, only had 2 strikeouts. The rest of the bullpen was struggling as well. You know, I said there was a possibility that this Mets team could be in the contention if Quintana, you know, pitches his life away and does an amazing time. Not only did the pitching suck, the offense still sucked, Lindsay. They did, with the exception of Mark Vientos' home run, they yet again could not get any extra base hits. It was all singles with the exception of that home run. 0-for-10 with runners in scoring position. They left 12 men on base. This is the worst trend that you could possibly ask for in a series that if you win, you go to the World Series. This is where all that house money, I think, has finally gone away. I think now they're reaching for the bag and they're only finding nickels and dimes because they are struggling right now. Down 3-1. It's hard to start, you know, listening in the background. You're starting to hear this fat lady start singing. Can you hear it? It's just really, really close because this Mets team is cooked. They are cooked.
Yeah. They got the top 4 in the order combined for 7 hits. But after that, Starling Marte, 1 for 5. Jose Iglesias, 1 for 4. Francisco Alvarez goes 1 for 1, scores a run, and then they pinch hit for him in the, I believe it was the 6th inning with Jesse Winker. And then Luis Torrens finished the game. Just not getting the support from anybody outside of the top of the order. It's kind of a theme we've seen with a lot of teams this postseason where the top of the order is getting it done. The Dodgers are one of those teams we've kind of talked about are the opposite. Yes, Betts goes 4 for 6. But like you said, Tommy Edman goes 2 for 6. Kike Hernandez picks up 2 more hits. Muncy gets on 4 times. Will Smith finally does something in the postseason. He goes 1 for 5 with an RBI. Even Chris Taylor, who was dreadful in the regular season, he goes 1 for 4, draws a walk as well. He scores a run. And I don't really know at this point what the Mets can do. I feel like they did a little bit of stuff. They started Harrison Bader in center versus Tyrone Taylor. But at this point, they're just rolling out the same guys every single time. And I don't know, facing elimination tonight, I don't know if this is the game where they finally shake it up or they say, if we go down, we're going to go down our way. We're going to go down with our same guys. But if
I think it's
me,
too late to shake it up now. Yeah, I think it's too late. I think the only thing you have left to do is pray.
I think if nothing else, if you can force this series back to LA, I don't know why, but for some reason, I feel like it's worse when you let the opponent celebrate on your field, right? And we know how New York fans can be. We know, and they're not nearly as bad as Phillies fans or anything like that, but we know that it's going to, for everything the Mets have done to, I'm going to argue, to overachieve based on their expectations entering the year. If it ends tonight in New York, I feel like some of that goodwill is going to be gone. And there's going to be more frustration from the fan base than if they can force it back to LA and LA has to win it in 6 versus 5.
Yeah, they should not even be in this postseason. Let's remember that. But I saw on socials last night after this game that people were asking for Mendoza to be fired. I mean, that's where Mets fans are at right now because he hasn't changed the lineup. They're saying he's to blame for this. And sure, it definitely is. But let's remember how they even got here in the first place. This is a little bigger than this series. And I'll take you back to that house money problem, okay? That they shouldn't even be here. You know, they shouldn't. But you shouldn't fire Mendoza. Are you kidding me? That would be the craziest. That'd be the craziest move of the offseason if that happened, in my mind. But no, I'm with you. This is going to be a wild rest of the series. It could end tonight. We could be seeing this one end tonight. We could be seeing the Dodgers hanging out, and we could see the Mets trying to book some tickets down to a tropical island after this one.
Yeah, we have. That's at 5:08 p.m. on FS1. David Peterson gets to start for the Mets. Jack Flaherty on the mound for the Dodgers. I'll remind you, first time these teams met up, he went 7 innings, 2 hits, no runs, 2 walks to 6 strikeouts. One of the few standard starts we've seen from a lot of guys in this postseason so far. I mean, didn't allow a base run until the 4th inning. You definitely have to feel like, for multiple reasons, the Dodgers have the advantage tonight, and it's going to be down to, it doesn't matter how well David Peterson does, right? It's going to be down to the offense. The offense has to find a way to perform for the Mets or their season is over. And at this point, I'm questioning whether or not they can do it. We'll see what the lineup is tonight. I guess for the Dodgers, we'll see if Freeman's back in there or not. But for the Mets, we'll see, do they go with the same guys and hope for better results, or are they a little more aggressive about moving some guys around, replacing some guys, seeing if they can kind of provide a jolt to this team? We'll figure out what happens. What are your expectations for these two games tonight?
Expectations in my mind for Dodgers is, can they close it out? And will we see Freddie Freeman? Because you're already at 3-1. Are you going to give him an extra day off and let him sit even longer? Because you did just fine with the bats yesterday. Are you going to let him have one more day off? I don't think so. I think we will see him. But my expectations is really focusing on the Dodgers side. Can they close it out? Can they do it early? Because they have shown that they can. On the Mets side, you just have to do something. You need a pulse. Right now, you don't have anything. So can they wake up and have some sort of jolt? That's the biggest thing. on the other flip side, on the other game with the Yankees and the Guardians, both of these pitchers, Luis Gil and Gavin Williams, are making their postseason debut. Really excited for this one. Gil had a great way to start off the season. I mean, we were talking about potentially being an all-star starter the way that he started off this season, cooled off quite a bit towards the end. Gavin Williams, on the flip side, he was on the complete opposite. He didn't start his season until July. But in September, Lindsay, he only allowed one home run. And he's making his postseason debut. This could be an interesting one. If the Guardians bullpen can keep it together, I think they have a valid shot at evening this series tonight.
Which would obviously be tons of fun. That would set up a Saturday matchup, 8:08 p.m. Yankees Guardians. We don't have starting pitchers for that yet. I'm sure that depends on who gets used tonight. But again, 5:08 p.m. Eastern, Dodgers Mets on FS1, 8:08 p.m. Eastern, Yankees Guardians on TBS. We'll be back with you on Monday for another episode of First Pitch. In the meantime, if you're listening on audio, do us a favor, leave us a 5-star review. If you're on YouTube, subscribe to the channel, hit the notification bell. Either way, tell your friends. They can go to firstpitchpodcast.com to find out all the different places to watch and take in the best daily recap show for Major League Baseball. Until next time, this has been First Pitch.